Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rick Swan.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. Now and live.
And this is the genius of Bray Wyatt. I am Luke Cohen. This is Adam the Blom PA, and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast review of WrestleMania 36 Night 2. So, yeah, WrestleMania 36 Night 2, the semi-main event, or the semi-main event because I'm British, was in fact the Firefly Funhouse match between John Cena and Bray Wyatt. And boy, howdy.
I mean, obviously, Luke is talking about the Firefly's Funhouse match as the most significant thing happening in Night 2. But I will point out that this is on the same show that did feature a Team Bad reunion. So maybe just, could we have a hierarchy, like, please?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This did have that Team Bad reunion, which was, of course, you know, a masterful bit of storytelling.
Unity. I loved it. It was my I've rewatched it twice since, and it hasn't dampened my feeling that it might be my favorite. I want to qualify it, maybe not match, because it isn't really, but I think it's my favorite WrestleMania moment of all time. Well, it's everything. Like, people who have kind of probably familiar with my work know that I like very high concept but very kind of tightly narratively focused, well performed melodrama. I like the lore of wrestling. I like its canon. I like its deep stretched mythology. I like the idea of these guys as gods rather than men. All of that kind of coalesced into, it was everything to me, Luke. I loved it. It was brilliantly performed by both men. It was a laser-focused dissection of John Cena. Biggest gift I think John Cena can give Bray Wyatt. Chock full of references, which we'll get into. Beautifully funny. Kind of like tense and scary in places. I know some people thought it was a bit too silly, but I thought, what more perfect way to not only have a victory over John Cena, but a unique character-based victory. Like, this is so much more, this does so much more for The Fiend than a match would have.
And it completely, like, reestablishes The Fiend as well. Like, a lot of people said that there was a lot of, you know, people were very much down in him after Hell in a Cell. Like, that sort of killed a lot of his momentum. You know, he got some of that heat back when he picked up the Universal title, but then he just lost to Goldberg. And I think a lot of people were sort of very much down on The Fiend. And this really goes to show that just one segment, just, you know, one cool feud and one great match, it's completely turned people around again on The Fiend.
Everyone is salvageable. I think the only thing that I kind of get even slightly worried about with it is that I do think it maybe further cements The Fiend as a character, not necessarily a wrestler, which is fine. Like, if he does these matches forever, I'm completely okay with that. But WWE seems to now have a divide in the company of who is, like, a really exciting wrestler and who is a really exciting character. Because on, like, most often it seems like The Fiend's matches get in the way of his aura. And it's exactly the same thing with The Undertaker as well. Like, seeing him live ruins, but it's a lot less effective than when he is in a carefully, hermetically controlled environment. And yeah, like, these are movie characters, and that is kind of what is them at their finest. Like, I don't necessarily know if I want to see a Fiend match after this, but I want to see more of the Fiend.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Because one of the big criticisms of the Fiend, really since Hell in a Cell, has been that people haven't liked his matches. They love the Firefly Funhouse promos. They love all of the sort of the lore and, you know, the, everything sort of around the character, but his matches have never connected. And that's because, you know, they effectively booked themselves into a corner, which is he's this unstoppable monster and, you know, Seth Rollins can do 36 whatever curb stomps and still not be able to pin him, which makes the matches not that interesting to watch. But yet when you put him into this sort of scenario, people really, really dig it. And it's funny, really, because, you know, yesterday's WrestleTalk podcast we did on Mania Night 1 was the Boneyard match actually good? Because people very much enjoyed it, but I think a lot of people enjoyed it from a sort of sudden ironic perspective, which was like, it was silly, goofy nonsense, you know, it was a bit of fun. Whereas this was actual genius. Mm-hmm. This was actually a brilliant bit of just movie magic, just sort of really put together. It was all based on character. It was all based on the history of these two. And it really, it's the greatest retcon of WrestleMania 30 I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. It almost makes you kind of, it almost reinstalls faith in WWE being just like, their failures can be turned into successes. So maybe like, even the worst possible idea can be a key part of a greater overarching story. That's why, you know, the biggest thing that WWE has in its favor, and it has always had in its favor, is its history. WWE, its characters are so unique because they've gone through so much stuff. And if they use the past stuff to forge new stories, then every story is going to feel kind of fresh and unique, and there's going to be, and every dynamic will be slightly different because these characters are steeped in so much history, which is why it's so frustrating when they just kind of like do something like a do-over, which is like, I think like compare like the Braun Strowman, like once again, like it was quite a mirror Mania, because you have the Firefly Funhouse and the Boneyard, and then you had Drew McIntyre and you had Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman's story coming out of nowhere, no real context behind it. Like, they didn't even try to kind of work some sort of like, oh, the history of Braun and Roman, you know, like Braun's going to prove to Roman that he's something, something, something. History of Braun, like kind of losing it in big matches. There's no history there. I mean, I get it. They didn't have time, but like there's a vignette they could have made. Whereas you compare that to like Drew McIntyre, like his squash match, it's essentially the same number of moves, but meaning so much more because of they really kind of, like Bray Wyatt, they took hold of his failures and used those to make his triumph an even bigger story than if they just had him triumph in the first place. WWE kind of booking themselves into a corner, then exploding out of it. It's you almost don't want them to get away with it, but Christ, Night 2 has honestly turned this into genuinely a top 10 WrestleMania for me.
Yeah, you said that before we came on air, that you think this might be one of your favorite WrestleManias of all time. And that is, it's, you know, a high bar and like a really big claim. But you know what? When you kind of look back on it, particularly when you have both nights as a whole, I do agree with you. And I think part of that really is helped by the fact that it was split over two nights. So they were just 2 3-hour shows as opposed to 1 7-hour show.
Oh, yeah.
And that, I think that helped massively. Really, really did. Because like that, the Edge-Randy Orton match, which was super, super long, you know, 36 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
It was long. We'll get to that. But, you know, that would have felt even longer on a 7-hour show. But on a 3-hour show, it just felt long. Yeah. And then it's also helped because you had it broken up, because you not just had, you know, the wrestling in the ring, you also had things like the Boneyard match and you had the Firefly Funhouse match, which was just, we kind of said this was just for insiders. Like, someone messaged us yesterday during the live stream we did, saying, I don't know how a casual fan would respond to this. And I was like, to be honest, it's not for the casual fans.
Yeah, no, it's not. like, we've seen the casual fans dropping off because they don't care about empty arena wrestling. So let's just... I think that's well why it's such a high Mania for me, like, now. Maybe in time, I'll look back on it and be just like, oh, this is actually oh, that Becky Lynch match really was a shame, or, oh, I mean, it did have Elias and Corbin on it, and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, every great Mania has a duff match or two. But I think it's coming out of it and just, like, what it could have been and the state of the world and how everyone's feeling right now, and everyone's really stressed and anxious and could really do with some escapism. And when WWE offers something that is so kind of taking chicken... and making chicken salad, and as Stone Cold would say, like, it's such a huge cathartic relief to be able to be excited about wrestling at this time when it seems like it's impossible to be excited about wrestling. That maybe there's some sort of high emotion that I'm riding right now, but yeah, like, I'm so thankful for being able to watch it, and yeah, like, being able to kind of talk about it online and see people getting really excited, and no one, you know, seeing Twitter being turned into a, oh, wrestling is great haven for once, for a brief moment in this timeline where Twitter right now is at its most horrific.
It was such a good moment, and everything is kind of riding on such a high that you even dropped a swear in a Wrestle Talk video, which is a big no-no.
Oh, no! I keep doing it. I'm so sorry.
Naughty boy. Hopefully I can remember to edit that in the podcast, because that could also get us in trouble there.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Like, this wasn't a split opinion thing. Certainly not like the Boneyard match or, you know, some of the other things we've had over this WrestleMania. This was very much just like, no, I absolutely loved that. I've seen a couple of people be like, no, I didn't get it, which I think is fine. It's to each their own. But I would say this was a universally praised segment. Let's run through some of our sort of favorite references and moments in there. So we had... Cena going into the Firefly Funhouse, which, you know, Bray had written on the door, is abandon hope, ye who exit here, rather than ye who enter here.
Yeah.
We had the whole SmackDown debut with Wyatt doing the angle promo and Cena coming out in his original gear and talking about how, like, it was one of his big failures because his debut didn't work and it nearly got him fired. You know, yeah. Like his sort of debut first couple of months run, he was just doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, which he was doing in this match where he was just swinging that fist over and over again, just saying ruthless aggression and constantly failing.
Yeah, it's so good. I love him entering to some really rubbish rock. Just to clarify, that wasn't Metallica, was it?
That was not Metallica.
You have to tell me if it was.
I can confirm this time it was not Metallica.
Excellent.
Yeah. That was really good. We had a reference to Nikki Bella in terms of sort of, you know, the other failures. And then we jumped to Saturday night's main event with Bray Wyatt in front of the big blue cage, introducing Cena and talking about how, like, the sort of what was once described as the muscle and hyperbole of the World Wrestling Federation.
I love
talking about how
the cage, like, and I don't want to get too kind of pretentious about it, but literally they were trapped in a cage of outmoded masculinity. Like, that's literally what it was. Johnny Large Meat. It was, like, funny and actually a devastating point to play. Like, it doesn't matter what little talent you've got. Look at their muscles. And Cena's body breaking down as he flexes too much. Like, it's some actually really dark, sad stuff in that segment. Oh, I loved it.
It was funny, actually. We were doing the WrestleMania 26 WrestleTalk Extra podcast review for Patreon. And that was the year where Ted DiBiase went into the Hall of Fame. And the only reason he was, like, the headlining Hall of Fame is because the Ultimate Warrior said no. And Ted DiBiase's big induction speech is that you don't have to be the best worker in wrestling to make it in WWE. You just have to be dependable. And I was like, that's a damning indictment of the World Wrestling Federation, I'll be honest with you. But you're absolutely right. Like, in the 80s, it wasn't about who was the best wrestler. It was who had the best fantasy muscles. And that's why Vince really likes Cena, is because he had really good vanity muscles.
Yeah. Still does. I mean, when he came out in those tiny shorts, it's just like, damn, he hasn't aged in 20 years.
So then we got into Thuganomics, John Cena, where he can only talk in rhymes, and he sort of makes references to Husky Harris and saying that Wyatt blew all of his chances. And then Bray Wyatt cut this fabulous promo, which was so full of emotion, where it's like, how dare you talk to me about chances, exposing the Thuganomics gimmick for being like, all you have done your entire career is be a bully, and you have made fun of people, you have belittled people, you're a bad person. Like, he actually said, you're a horrible person.
Yeah, gave him a chance to be better. he gave him a chance, and then Cena just ended with the traditional "these nuts."
Yeah. Oh, amazing, amazing stuff. Then we got old Bray Wyatt, so like back into the cult leader gimmick.
Oh, did you get did you get the chain reference?
The chain reference? So did I miss the chain?
So he wraps the chain around his wrist and hits Cena with it. That is a reference to the first time John Cena lost a championship, because Carlito did it. Carlito wrapped it thing. That's Cena's first major championship loss in WWE.
Well, there you go. Isn't Look it? At Adam bringing the knowledge.
And the swears. I've got a potty mouth and a potty brain.
So then we get the cult leader Bray again, sort of in the rocking chair. We even get to see Sister Abigail for a brief moment in time, talking about WrestleMania 30, and offers him the chance to rewrite history the way that it should have been. And he talks about how the people wanted me. The people didn't want you. But you claim to be a man of the people, and you just never listened to them. Mm. And yeah, because Cena beat him at WrestleMania 30, which was not the right call. The right call would have been to put Bray Wyatt over. And this was Wyatt's chance to rewrite that history. And he offers Cena the chair to hit him with it. And this time, Cena swung the chair.
Yeah. Cena, this is a heel. Well, I mean, obviously it's a hypothetical, but that's the heel turn. And just morphing into the NWO, the biggest face in the history of the business, turning heel. And, you know, I was struggling to kind of see, like, what's Bray's, because we all like look at this promo as this is written by Bray Wyatt. I'm sure there's a collaboration with him and Cena, but, you know, we see this as an extension of Bray Wyatt's brain. What is Bray Wyatt's take on the NWO from watching that? Does he think that Cena wouldn't have looked cool no matter what, because he comes out doing the air guitar and looks like, I'm trying to think of not a swear, but he looks like an idiot. Or does he think that, this is the heel turn, obviously Hogan's heel turn, hugely successful. Is that the thing that John Cena should have done? I actually can't quite work it out, because Cena comes out and acts like an idiot. But also, maybe it could have been great. I'm not sure. What do you think?
Well, so I read it as very much like, it was Hollywood Hogan. And Cena is now Hollywood Cena. He is. You could make the argument that he has turned his back on the wrestling world in the same way that Hogan sort of did when he left to go be a Hollywood star, then came back, and then did the big mega heel turn for a Bash at the Beach. And as you said, that kind of like completely rejuvenated his career. I'm wondering if this was Bray Wyatt suggesting that if you'd have done it, you could have been NWO Hogan had you turned heel, and he's in there as Eazy-E. Eazy-E was effectively the Vince McMahon of WCW, and Eazy-E and Hogan were best mates, and Hogan was on top forever because he was mates with Eazy-E. And so I wonder if there's like some sort of connections with all of that in there. But the key to it is that Cena effectively rejected it straight away, because he came in, they did the two sweet, and then he started to beat up Bray Wyatt. It was like I'm not going to do this heel turn. I'm not going to be this Hollywood sellout. I'm not going to be Hollywood Hogan. And when he's beating him up, when he's punching Bray Wyatt, and you've got Vince McMahon doing the keep your hands up, which is apparently something that he always tells his wrestlers. Kevin Owens said on Talk Is Jericho that Vince McMahon has said, if you're in a fight, you'd get your hands up if someone was trying to punch you. You wouldn't just stick your chin out for a punch. So there's nice lots of deep cut references in there. And then you've got like Abby and Mercy saying like, stop hitting him. You're going to really upset him. And I love the fact that what it turns into is he wasn't punching Bray. He was punching Husky Harris, or the Husky Harris metaphor in all of this, which is Husker's the pig boy. And it was just more of that. You were beating down people because you gave them sort of like not weight complexes, but you used their weight against them to make them feel bad.
And stopping them when they're in their development stage. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, completely. And then that gave rise to the Fiend, who then completely took him out with the mandible claw, hit the Sister Abigail, and Bray Wyatt in his sort of Mr. Rogers form counted the pin. It was something that will be talked about for years and years and years to come.
Yeah.
I think like in the sort of the coming days, we're going to hear so much about this. There's going to be so much written about it. And I'm super excited to read about this. Like, really much to like our Discord chat has been nothing but talk of this match. Like, Pete's just been messaging me saying like how awesome it was. Our editor Rich has been messaging me talking about how awesome it was.
Yeah.
it's just, it was an incredible bit of cinema.
It was. The thing is, WWE, like say, we say it a lot, they tell movies, this is the best movie they've ever made, for sure. Yeah.
It's better than See No Evil.
This summer, evil gets raw. I thought it was perfect, really. And now I want nothing more in this world than at WrestleMania 37 to be headlined by a Firefly Boneyard match. Taker versus The Fiend, Firefly Boneyard, give it to me.
You could make the argument that Taker shouldn't have beat Bray either, so...
He's just going to go through all of them, ticking them all off.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Jobber JJ said, Firefly Funhouse was such good S-word. How is Bray wasted? Fair play to Cena for getting along and getting squashed. WCW Nitro and WrestleMania. Last Man Standing was good, but too long. A lot of feel-good babyface wins. Apparently that was a call by Vince, is that he wanted to have a lot of sort of babyfaces going over on the show to give it a sort of like, you know, take people's minds off of what's currently going on.
Yeah. I mean, that's like his reaction to, do you remember Kurt Angle randomly winning the WWF Championship in 2001, immediately after 9/11? But he's just like, Vince has a very strong kind of feeling like, what, you know, the world needs this right now. And that's why he can kind of gives them stuff like this. Like WWE always kind of tends to kind of, you know, emerge out of a crisis with kind of like, come on, we're all together in this, which is so, it's so weird for like considering like how toxic the community can be around WWE so often that they really do, like when the world is hurting, they really try and kind of give us what we want.
give me what I want. Matthew Muldoon has actually pointed out something that I think I'd certainly missed. I don't know about you, but he said everyone seems to have missed the significance of Cena wearing New York Yankees gear during the Thuganomics thing. It's a callback to the CM Punk promo. Oh, you've become what you hate.
You're the New York Yankees. Bam.
Yeah.
He is the franchise.
Excellent. I missed that. That's a very good one. And that's one of the things I love about this match. I certainly wouldn't put it as like everyone has seemed to have missed, but it's just that like it's the more you watch it, the more things you pick up on.
Yeah.
And I said to you before we came on air, it reminds me of, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time, Hot Fuzz, a movie that every time I watch it, I always spot something new. somehow, you know, I've watched that movie 50,000 times, and yet every single time I'm like, oh, that's cool. That's something interesting that I didn't spot previously.
Yeah, but like Hot Fuzz as well, like the references don't overpower it. Like you're not, you don't feel like you're, obviously you know that you're getting a lot of references, but there's a very clear through line, you know, that Cena can't beat himself. He can't do what's best for his own character. He can't stop being this kind of crazy corporate image, and he can't stop going back to his old failures over and over again. I can't keep super chatting. I'll talk for another 50 minutes.
Chris Blassett, if the Fiend had kept the title, do you think this would have been a much bigger match for him? Also, when was the last time WWE put on a TV-14 show in the PG era? In total, Mania, I give Mania 7 out of 10. Was this TV-14?
I mean, it had a swear in it.
I suppose it did have a swear, didn't it?
Such good S.
Yeah.
Plus, of course, bitch. They did say bitch a lot.
Yeah, but Kevin Owens also said the S word on Raw, which I believe is also still would have been rated PG. I think it's just, you know, they are getting a bit more edgy, maybe. Canamil Probabil, I was legit jumping, laughing, rolling around IRL during the Funhouse match. Wrestling hasn't got such reactions from me in ages. 10 out of 10. Mark Flay said, good to see Adam works for WWE now as WrestleTalk. Firefly Funhouse was amazing, and I disliked the Taker match. Yeah, a lot of people said that you called the Firefly Funhouse match.
It was so much better than what I put in my booking. It was like going back to Cena's stuff, like teleporting Cena around, changing Cena's costume, reverting him to old versions of himself. So that element was in there, sure. But this is so much more of a multi-layered and so much better for Bray Wyatt, like in terms of actually making a point rather than just beating up Cena in his, you know, rather than just beating up the three faces of John Cena, just like destroying him as an idea. Yeah. I think, yeah, no, no, Bray did it better.
Peter Mullen said, Adam, how does it feel to be owed royalties by Bray? Incredible prediction video that I'm pretty sure they just said been ours. This one's much better.
I think I mean, I'll take it in copies of Doom Eternal, to be honest.
You're going to be swimming in those things. People just keep giving you their copies of it. Please. They keep winning Quizzlemania.
Please, I want it.
Zach Barati said, what if where John and Bray fought is the Funhouse? Oh, I'm not sure. Or what or where? I'm not sure what you're trying to say there, Zach. But I've seen a few people that sort of ask where this match really took place, because was this in the Funhouse? Was this in Bray's mind? Was it in John's mind? Where really was this match?
I thought it was in John's mind.
I thought it was John's mind. And lastly, we'll do this one from Magnus, because we got quite a lot of messages about this. Lastly from Magnus, who says, not the biggest fan of Taker AJ, but loved Bray Cena.
Yeah.
So there you go. I think it was pretty much universally praised. But let's go into the show itself. It opened with something that wasn't overly praised, which was Natalya versus Liv Morgan on the pre-show. I've got two notes. Liv wins. It was a match.
I think I've got Liv beat Natalya in a painfully quiet match. I'm not sure if Byron Saxton was in the toilet or his mic didn't work, but it was Tom Phillips by himself, which was a terrible idea because Tom Phillips just stopped talking for almost like 20 seconds at a time, and neither Liv or Natalya are particularly good on, like, especially in-ring kind of trash talk promos. I mean, Natalya, we all know with Natalya, she doesn't quite sound human. Ask her. But like, yeah, just talk over them, please, Tom. It made me really miss Michael Cole and JBL.
Do you know what? I had that exact same thought as well, that particularly during the Edge Randy match, I was like, I really wish Michael Cole was calling this.
I could, like, two guys who were around during the Attitude and Ruthless Aggressions eras, why aren't they calling the match between Edge and Randy Orton? Because it's, you know, 10... like 15 years in the build. I don't know. Well,
because it's Raw. It's a Raw angle. Therefore, you've got to have the Raw commentators do it, Adam.
Good point. My fault.
The show opened with Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley with This was an excellent match.
Really good.
Really, really enjoyed this. Flair kicked out of the Riptide, and Charlotte tapped out Ripley with this sort of like really very high bridging figure eight. And it was back and forth action. It made Ripley look like an absolute superstar. And do you know what? I mean, I may get some heat for this, but I do think Charlotte winning the title was the right call.
Yeah, me too. This is the kind of, this is the biggest backlash I've seen. To something that I think is good. This is what I've got a lot of kind of people kind of slamming me for. Because I also think that Charlotte in NXT is a good thing. I think Charlotte's done everything she can on the main roster for now. I think Rhea's done everything she can in NXT. Absolutely swap them over. And all that matters is that the match is good. And the match was great. Genuinely, like, up there with Charlotte Asuka. Same really high bridge on the figure eight. They worked. It was almost even better just because the sheer amount of limb work. Like, the psychology in this match was so strong. Working the left knee constantly. Rhea kind of screaming her way through the pain. Charlotte can't put her away for ages. And then finally, because Rhea's human and 23 and everyone loses sometimes, she lost in a really competitive match on the biggest stage of them all. Anyone who uses the term burial to describe this match doesn't know what burial means.
This was not a burial whatsoever. Ripley got so much out of this match. Like, this really legitimized her, for a lot of people, you know, and I think this made her look absolutely awesome in defeat. And yeah, like, Charlotte going to NXT, you know, they haven't beaten AEW in the ratings all year. And I think they're looking for something that can completely freshen it up. But also, like, Charlotte on Raw can't be the top star because Becky's the top star. And if Ronda comes back, that's just going to push Charlotte down even further. She could go over to SmackDown, but that's very much in sort of like the Bayley Banks wheelhouse at the moment. So yeah, go to NXT and be the top star down there instead, where you're not sort of competing against other people for that top position. Also, now she can use her star power to elevate people like Io Shirai, Dakota Kai, Mia Yim, Shotzi Blackheart, Kylie Rae, Viper. There's like a whole list of stacked talent down in NXT, in NXT UK, that Charlotte can now work with and, you know, make them into even bigger stars than they already are.
Yeah, look at the Funhouse match. A Funhouse match, if anything, is a shining example of how you can get beat, but it can become part of a much bigger story in the end. Like, I don't think this is the last time that Rhea and Charlotte will fight. Like, nope. I think when Charlotte eventually finishes up her tour of NXT, she's going to come back, and what everyone's going to want to see is Rhea kick her ass. And I think they'll do that because, yeah, like, it's all just about how you use the story elements. And so far, yeah, you've got this element of Rhea, coming up against one of the greatest women wrestlers in the history of wrestling, and not being able to get the job done this time, and how does that change her? I think it's fantastic. Yeah. I think it's fantastic. Really, absolutely the right call.
We had Aleister Black versus Bobby Lashley then. Bobby Lashley's now got new tights, so I've rebranded him the All Tightly Bobby Lashley. Thank you very much. Thanks, Adam. And Black won with the Black Mass out of nowhere because Bobby had the match won effectively when he was about to hit the Dominator. And then Lana from the outside said, no, do a spear. And so Bobby Lashley was like, sounds good. Put him down, went to do a spear, and Aleister gave him the Black Mass and pinned him.
Lana really upset that her hero Goldberg lost last night. So that was really dumb, really contrived. It was fine. It was a match that happened. All I'm now looking forward to is... like I said on Twitter, Lashley and Lana's slow motion empty arena divorce.
Oh, yeah. I mean, effectively, I mean, I think it's quite clear this was supposed to be Rusev versus Lashley and sort of like end that storyline. But Rusev, I don't think, is re-signing. And if he's not re-signing, he's not getting that WrestleMania card. So Aleister Black gets that position instead.
Yeah.
It was what it was. We had a Kayla Braxton interview with Bayley, and then they advertised that Money in the Bank is happening on May 10th. Not in a building with people, it's not.
That's right. Look, we saw the triple threat ladder match. It can work. And with even more moving parts, I think, like, with more people, like eight men in the ring or seven or whatever, then, yeah, I think it will probably be fine. But,
yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be weird.
I wonder if it'll be like that. Do you remember the Money in the Bank match that they did? And they had like a lot of the top guys. I think they had like Cena and Randy Orton in there. And effectively, it was a match where people were trying not to take bumps. It was just like actively avoiding the ladders.
No, I haven't seen it. Which one was that one?
I can't remember what it was, but anytime you watch Randy Orton in a ladder match, he is actively avoiding taking bumps on ladders, and it's just like, nope, I'm just going to land on my feet and walk away from you now.
Right, his shoulders are made of glass. So.
Yeah. Gronk cut a promo saying that he was going to be the 24/7 champion by the end of the tonight. So,
and he was.
Hot start for the Gronk. And then we got what I'm sure was your favorite match of the night, which was Otis versus Dolph Ziggler. It's Dolph Ziggler's first WrestleMania singles match, and he's been with that company for about 120 years at this point. This was the most amazing video package I've ever seen, and I loved this match. I loved this story. I loved this finish. I loved everything about it. What did you think, Adam?
I liked Dolph's kind of Streets of Rage outfit when he came out. That was he gets worse every time. Otis is not for me. I don't find him particularly charming, but I recognize that they took all of the story elements that they'd set up and paid them all off. So yeah, that works. It's a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. A twist, yep, that makes sense. Everyone's character motivations make sense. Yeah, fine. Fine. Yeah. It's the best it could have been.
So the end saw, because Sonya came out with Dolph Ziggler, because obviously they were in cahoots this whole time. And then towards the end, Mandy comes out and she attacks Sonya Deville. She gets in the ring and low blows Dolph. And then Otis hits the caterpillar for the win and he picks up Mandy Rose. And as Michael Cole said, he won the match and the girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Hearing it coming out of Michael Cole as well. At least JBL didn't say it.
It was a sweaty old kiss that as well.
Oh, it was. It was very much a kind of a school play, like, we don't quite know how to, but I'm not opening my mouth. You're getting pressed closed lips, Otis. That's what you're getting.
It was like she did kiss him and then was like, oh god, he's much sweatier than I thought he would be. Right, then we got I said in my, in case you missed it, video, that this was probably going to be the most contentious match of the night in terms of opinions. And that was Edge versus Randy Orton in their last man standing match. And I would say that this match was very, very good. I thought the emotion was really, it felt real. I thought the ending was particularly brilliant with Edge doing the concerto onto Randy Orton on top of that trailer with tears streaming down his face as he was like conflicted about what he was going to do. This felt like a real fight. It just went far too long. It was 36 minutes and it didn't need to be 36 minutes. It's every Triple H WrestleMania match. You don't need to go. You're not a carder. You don't need to go 40 minutes, and I don't think you can really do 40 minutes. If you just shaved 20 minutes off this, even if you shaved 10 minutes off this, I think it would have been a much, much better match.
It's almost exactly where you can make the cuts as well. Like, I thought the stuff in the gym was fun because that's making the most of where you are. But like, Who cares about an office? Who cares about a desk? A white, you know, oh, there's a white corridor. They spent so long in that corridor. There wasn't any kind of like signature spots, or even like at the beginning when like Randy was talking, like, you did this to yourself and stuff, like all of that stuff made the beginning of the match feel really good. And I was really invested. It was like, yeah, this is like a weird play that I'm watching. And then there were no kind of developments on that. They didn't even trash talk each other much as they were doing the walk and brawl from the gym to the backstage area. And they should have just gone from the gym, cut all of that stuff backstage of the office, cut the stuff like by the cameras, and then just gone straight to the backstage area. Just get to the truck as soon as you can. I think it's a shame. I think some people are really going to fixate on how boring the middle was, and it was, because nothing really happened. Like, there wasn't even an actual memorable spot for about 10 minutes, which is a long time.
Yeah. There's only so many times you can watch people be thrown into something and a referee counts to 10 before it becomes too much.
Yeah. And did you see that Edge did a swear? You must have been very upset about that, Luke.
Well, I was just hoping it didn't come through on my microphone and get us demonetized by the YouTube lords that be. But yeah, I thought, as I said, what I really liked about this, I'm going to try and focus on the positives. What I really liked about this was the emotion and the drama and the level of intensity that these two had against each other. I really, really liked that. And, you know, for Edge's comeback match, I thought the finale was fantastic. I thought that him standing tall and Hidden the Concerto on Randy, which, you know, started all of this, was it all coming full circle, and that was really, really nice.
Yeah, I thought they kept it simple, just focused on the two of them, which actually I think is the right call. I thought, because they played up so much of Beth in the video package, I was sure she was going to get involved in some way, but they chose not to do that. And because I think it made that, yeah, the ending a lot more intimate. Just that, the final crack of the steel. I thought it was a shame they showed a colossal, like, inhumanly big ladder and didn't do anything with it. But I think, was there someone on that ladder? I've heard people say there might have been a cameraman on it. Mm-mm. But, like,
I tell you what, I'm not being that camera operator. Balls to that, mate. Standing there on a rickety old ladder with a big sort of camera on your shoulder. Balls to that, lad.
There was, because there was that huge ladder, and then there was also, like, a table with crisps on it. And I thought, oh, someone's going to go through those crisps. And they didn't. No one went through the crisps, which is, or chips, as our audience might know them.
Yeah,
I thought, yeah.
So really, that's our biggest disappointment of the night. No one went through the chips.
Yeah. I liked Edge doing his, like, I've learnt parkour in the 9 years I'm away. Like a dad, you know, just like,
yeah.
When he did like a weird little spider monkey thing off the roof of that office and then dropped a very short elbow onto Randy, it's just like,
yeah,
that didn't look as good as you thought it was going to, huh?
And the crotch slam that he did off the gym equipment,
just swinging, here is my penis. Yeah, like a shame, but I definitely think it's like worthy of Edge and this feud. I think that ending,
yeah,
like, it, again, more of a moment than a match, I guess.
Yeah. I also felt mad uncomfortable when they were strangling each other in with gym equipment, being that we're sort of 2 weeks removed from that Dark Side of the Ring documentary.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. What also made me uncomfortable was Mojo getting beaten up by a load of random lads. I don't know who any of these people were. And then the Gronk did a dive and he pinned Mojo Rawley, and he's the 24/7 champion.
Yeah. And no one got it back off him before it ended, so he's coming back. Or
Well, he's signed, isn't he? So he's like, he's the 24/7 guy now.
Oh god, I've forgotten he'd signed. Thanks, Luke. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
mate,
for reminding me. Yeah, the Gronk.
We actually had a mailbag question come in on our Friday show, which I thought was very interesting, which is, do you think that WWE have signed the Gronk with sort of like the, it's, so it's not just for WWE, it's also an XFL thing?
Oh,
because,
okay,
you could have either the Gronk be a pundit, or could you coax him out of retirement and become a player for one of the XFL teams?
Didn't even know he was retired. Don't know who he plays for. All I know is that he annoys me.
He is awful. Then we had Street Profits versus Austin Theory and Angel Garza in a 5-minute TV match, which the Profits won. And then the heels were beating down the Profits afterwards, when who should make the save but Bianca Belair.
Yay.
Which, in what I think was like an NXT call-up, because she felt like she was now part of this act. This wasn't just like a little cute moment. This could be building to a six-man, you know, possibly even on Raw tonight.
Maybe. I hope it isn't. I hope that she's got a bit more NXT left in her. I know that she's lost on TakeOver like twice now in a singles match, but I do think her story with Charlotte's not over. I think she'd mm-hmm. be a really good first or maybe even last person for her. But I would also understand if you put Bianca with the Street Profits. I think it's diluting her a little bit. I think she's a little bit better than the Street Profits. I think the Street Profits are fine. I think Montez Ford is fantastic, and obviously their relationship is the key to all of this. But seeing Bianca was a genuine highlight of WrestleMania. She's so great.
Yeah, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Montez Ford is a future WWE champion. Someone who certainly won't be, though, is Titus O'Neil, who randomly took over the hosting duties. He just said, hey, WrestleMania needs a host. I'm like, A, no, it doesn't. B, why is it you? And then, so what was the purpose of Titus? Why was he here?
Well, I think they like him, obviously. Like, he's, because he's, he is, gen- he's... Yeah, for as much as we make fun of him, he's probably one of the nicest people on their roster.
Oh, he's lovely. He's a properly nice guy.
It's good to see him get paid to do something. And there's nothing else you're not going to pay to see him wrestle. So yeah, I guess like I thought his reaction after the funhouse was funny. I don't think it ruined the funhouse. I thought it was just like, yeah, okay. Titus is a sort of like backstage guy. Like he'd be better than Byron on commentary. So
yeah,
yeah. If this is them kind of segueing Titus into something more of that role, I think that's a lot better for him. But also maybe it was just a random thing because he's not sick, and so they could get him on the show.
Then we've got the 5-way elimination match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Bayley versus Sasha Banks versus Lacey Evans versus Naomi versus Tamina, with, as you said, the all important moment of Team Bad reuniting for a fleeting moment.
Highlight of the show. Highlight of the weekend.
Yeah. As I sort of predicted, everyone would gang up on Tamina to pin her, which actually came later than I thought it would do. I thought it would be like the very first thing they did in this match. And then we got Naomi eliminated from the bank statement. Then Bayley accidentally hit Sasha Banks. And then there was this moment where Lacey Evans went to do the women's right, and Bayley sort of like dodged out of the way, told Banks to move, but then also directed the motion of the women's right to hit Sasha Banks so that Lacey could pin her while Bayley watched on.
Then we had the New Year's Revolution 2005 spot of Triple H being just like, I'm not going to.
Yeah, no, oh,
a bit tired, actually.
Ow, my arm.
yeah, I thought it was. I thought it went a bit long. I don't know. Maybe not. I thought Tamina having that Thanos moment of rah. obviously, unity is very important, and yeah, I don't dislike the amount of time they gave to Lacey Evans. Obviously, I think they see something in her.
America.
I like the kind of it's everything to you.
I have to salute.
Channeling all of my mother powers into. I like the trash talking that Bayley and Sasha did. Like, hey, mom. Hey, you're a mother. How's it like having kids, you idiot? Come on,
stupid thing to do. You idiot.
I thought it was interesting that they didn't have Sasha and Bayley be the final two. So they completely avoid them coming to blows. Obviously, they're still on the same page. Sasha looking at the belt, handing it over. It's all very Batista Triple H, and I really dig it. And I think if they can stretch it to SummerSlam 5 years after TakeOver Brooklyn.
There it is.
Do it, please. And please let the world be better by then so we can see it in front of a crowd.
That's what I figured. When we were doing our predictions, I thought they were going to head to Bayley Banks at SummerSlam. That's the match you want to see. Like, that's what we're all building to. You don't do the split in this five-way. You tease the split in this five-way, and then you build to the singles match at SummerSlam. So I was really, really happy with the finish of this. I thought it was a fine little match, actually. And Banks helped Bayley win in the end by giving Lacey Evans the backstabber so that Bayley could do her inverted DDT thing. Perfectly fine stuff. Mm. Then we got the John Cena Fiend Firefly Funhouse match, which we talked about at the start of this show. It was excellent. I'm probably going to watch it again once we finish this call because it was just so good. So good. And then we had our main event of Drew McIntyre versus Brock Lesnar, a.k.a. Spam the Finish Button.
Yay.
Stored up all those finishes. But I will say that one of the things I do like about the Brock Lesnar matches is that there is always an element to it where you're like, he's going to pin someone. And it's when he hit Drew with the F5 and Drew kicked out at 1. So he lifted him up and he hit a second F5 and Drew kicked out at 2. And he'd hoisted him up and I was like, oh, he's going to reverse this one. No, he hit that third F5 and I thought, oh dear. Oh no. They're just going to pin him at this point because why the heck not, I guess. Yeah. And so when Drew kicked out, it genuinely made me go like, yes, come on, Drew, kick out of it. Hit him with some claymores now. So I think that it actually worked. It worked way better than it did for Braun and Goldberg.
Yeah.
Because as you said at the start of this, there's more investment in this storyline because there actually has been a storyline. And I actually quite enjoyed the 5 minutes that it went.
Say what you want against the main event of WrestleMania 34, which was legit really bad. But Brock winning there did set him up to be able to win at any point. And also, like, yeah, even WrestleMania main events aren't safe from something terrible happening. So, yeah, I completely agree. I thought Brock was going to retain. Not before the match, but during the match, I was like, oh, no. He's hit the Claymore and it didn't do anything. And, oh, no. Yeah. He's just gonna hit him with, you know, Brock's idea of putting someone over, hitting them with six F5s rather than, you know, one. I was happy with it. I thought they could have done something a little different, just because that it is a very recognizable formula. I think if they really wanted to make Drew, they could have had him like ragdoll Brock around a bit more. Like, actually have it be a competitive match, because we know that Brock's got that in him. We've seen him wrestle for half an hour at the Rumble. We know that he's capable of going at that length. And I don't know. Great. Like, just because the video package is so good. And again, you feel for Drew so much because of these terrible circumstances that, you know, this decades-long journey he's taken to get to this point. The pinnacle for literally everyone in that industry still. And to have it happen in front of no fans, it could only have ended with him winning, and I'm really, 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 really happy for him.
Really, really happy for him. The first British-born WWE champion in history. So, hey, go us, I guess.
Look at the English doing that. Just like if he was from England, we would say the first English born. But
100%,
like Andy Murray. I was just like, whenever he loses, he's Scottish, but whenever he wins, he's British.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, good, a British Wimbledon champion. Lovely stuff. Oh, Andy Murray, you're terrible because you're Scottish and you always lose. Yeah, so I thought it was a fun way to close the show. Really, really happy for Drew. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, really. He's worked so, so hard to get to this point. So very, very happy for him. Wish it could have been in front of 80,000 fans, but, you know, we are where we are. And it is what it is. So I thumbs up from me for that. Right, before we get into the rest of your super chats, let's have the all-important end of season. I can't remember what season this is now. Season 3 or 4 of Wrestle League, which ran from the Rumble through to Mania. We have got our official final standings here. I want to say, first off, F Dolph Ziggler and F John Cena and F Braun Strowman, because they were my bad picks. But in last place, once again, it's Oliver Davis with 35 points. He has come either last or second to last ever since we started Wrestle League. He's very bad at predictions.
I think he just really likes dressing up and singing. I think we won't let him do it otherwise. So it's his outlet.
After that was Pete with 37 points. Then we had Andy with 40 points. Then it was Laurie with 41. Myself with 42. Which can only mean, with 43 points in his first Wrestle League season, the predictions winner was Adam the Blompier. So well done to you,
thank
mate.
Thank you, mate. I didn't drop a single match on night two. Night one was pretty bad for me, but night two, literally, from Liv down to Drew, I got them all.
Excellent. Do we do Liv?
I did.
Oh, bugger. Damn it. Maybe that's why I didn't win then. I didn't predict that one. So, let's get into the rest of your super chats. Myron Speed said, rewatch the Funhouse match with Luke and Laurie's reactions. Amazing. Surely Vince goes with two Night Manias going forward. It's twice as many tickets.
I guess it's just, is it also twice as much rent for the venue? Who knows?
I would have thought. Well, I mean, you've got to rent it twice anyway for NXT, haven't you?
Not a stadium.
Oh, I suppose it's a smaller thing, isn't it? Yeah, I'm thinking of like when they do SummerSlam. Sorry, that's my bad. But yeah, I suppose it was, you got to do two nights of booking it, I suppose, yeah.
I mean, they're in it to set up. They're in there for the whole week beforehand. So maybe if they just add the Saturday and they just speed up production. And I mean, yes, please, shorter manias. Like, this was an 100%. Absolute blessing for it to be all done at what? Half three?
Oh, it was... Glorious, mate. Absolutely glorious. Dale Raddit, I think they should use the Fiend like Balor does the Demon. Have him fuel Bray and make appearances every so often for certain matches. So I guess saying you don't always have the Fiend come out.
Oh, yeah.
So you just have like Bray Wyatt do the matches, and then when it really calls for it, then you bring out the Fiend.
And then when it really, really calls for it, you bring out the Funhouse.
There it is. J-Cool Gaming 39, or J-Cool 39 Gaming, rather. Absolutely loved Cena versus The Fiend, and just want to say love you guys and your channel. Keep up the awesomely consistent consistency. P.S. Stay safe. Yes, everyone, make sure you've all washed your hands. Adam did an excellent PSA about this over on our Instagram to tell you all to wash your hands to an excellent bit of music choice, mate.
Thank you, mate. That took way longer to edit than I thought it would.
Everyone else just did theirs with music in the background. They just like played it on their iPad or whatever. Adam's like, no, I'm going to edit this.
I'm your Wrestle League champion. I hold myself to higher standards.
Taylor says, so glad Wyatt and Cena could work together like this. Big props to Cena for allowing his career to be deconstructed in such an interesting way. 6 stars.
Absolutely.
Daniel says, I'm still astounded by the Fiend versus Cena match. It was a masterpiece. A single segment reignited my love of WWE, something I've been cold on for a while. Davan Rajan says, Bray to get revenge on Undertaker next, which we sort of theorized could be. Brett says, when Bray and Cena did the WCW bit, I read it as Cena is Vince's big star and its competition had Hogan, both each company's golden goose.
I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways to read it. So clever. What a clever boy.
The big, the bad one, Ryan B. Bad. The chain fist is a reference to Cena hitting Big Show for his first US title win in his Mania match.
Well, I mean, it could be both. I mean, this
could be both.
In my one, Cena actually got hit in the head with a chain like he did in the actual ring. So, yeah. Step off.
Zach. Did you also hear John called Bray a slut? Yes, the line was, what was it? You're a slut for opportunities. You keep blowing them.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. I mean, the Doctor of Thugonomics character was mega problematic. So I guess that's the language you use.
Let's not shame sex workers. CM Punk return confirmed. Did Wyatt's time with Hardy help create this match?
I don't know. I think like Bray is like he's obviously kind of a wrestling historian. I think he understands the climate of today's wrestling, and so obviously I do think there's I think seeing Matt Hardy being able to do that and for it to compel the fans, obviously, even if there's not like even if you're not borrowing like images or techniques, then just knowing that there is an appetite out there for this style of match, of course that's gonna light a fire under Bray Wyatt. Yeah, I do think Matt Hardy there's obviously an awareness there.
Yeah, totally. Zach said, in the Funhouse match during the Thug Life part, I almost missed John Cena calling Bray a slut. Trenton Brown, so good we met. WWE has taken full ownership of the good S-word meme, and wrestling fans need a new joke to make fun of WWE's bad booking.
Oh, the onus is on us, I guess.
Craig Thompson, Cena said that he would be ending the most overhyped, overvalued, overprivileged WWE star in existence. Then he disappeared at the end, .. himself. Yeah, I forgot to mention, that was my favorite moment of the whole thing, is that Cena promo being turned around. That he, you know, before on SmackDown, he said, I'm going to, at WrestleMania, we're going to eliminate the most overhyped, overprivileged star. And what he actually, and then it just focuses in on his face as he's saying those words as Bray Wyatt ended him. Cena effectively ended him. It was just masterful.
Didn't even make that kind of, just that exact connection. Like, wonderful.
Jobber JJ, Titus's reaction to the Funhouse is mine after seeing him kiss his son. And Robert Ray said, I want Vince in the Firefly Funhouse match, please. Oh, Bray versus Vince in a Firefly Funhouse match. Surely that's the next one, right? Or that's the one you want to like. That's the pinnacle.
We are just we are now just all of the fancy booking is who's for the Boneyard matches and who's for the Funhouse matches. Mick Foley should be in the Boneyard. Vince should be in the Funhouse. Oh my god.
Yeah. On the subject of Edge versus Orton, Matthew Robinson says, love Edge versus Orton, and Cena match was all great. Shows were not bad for no fans. Love what you guys do, keeping our spirits up. And Bradley Filter said, I wish that Edge speared Randy off the crow's nest for the win instead of an MCU movie to get off the top of the truck. Everything was pre-taped. You could have done like the big spear off the production truck, like through, you know, various tables and boxes and whatnot.
Yeah, but I thought like the concerto obviously is the quiet option. That is the reincorporation of what they've done before. So I get it. I mean, I do think they like there wasn't really the biggest there wasn't a big stunt. Nothing to rival Owens last on night one.
Yeah. We have also had a message from, this is sort of WrestleMania miscellaneous. Injection said, you can run it back with Taker and Orton, TBH. Not sure what that's in reference to. Anthony Williams, thank you for your very generous donation. So you'll think the idea that WWE gives Charlotte more chances to have better matches than Becky is too tinfoil hatty. Vince hates Shayna so much he gave an NXT match more time and a better finish over the main roster champion. So this was on last night's stream. I said that it was them giving it more time was almost like a direct shot at Shayna and some more like fuel to bury her. And I was like, I think that might be a bit too tinfoil hatty. I think it was just that they wanted to make the Charlotte and Rhea match seem like a really big deal. And they did.
I think that's the most damning thing about Becky and Baszler. Like, yeah, you could argue that the wrong person won. You could argue that you would prefer it if Becky Lynch, if we saw a title change there. The most damning thing about it is it didn't feel like a big deal. Didn't feel like a Mania match. That's the worst part about it.
Joe Vicondi, sorry, but I thought the show sucked. Funhouse was dumb at best, and Drew Lesnar should have been an actual proper match instead of finisher spamming. Ken Ford said, did The Miz go to the real Funhouse? Wait, The Miz was sent home. He was sent home to his actual. I suppose his house is fun, if you want to call it a fun house.
If you've watched Miz and Mrs., he's got a pretty fun house. Got a big house.
Matthew Robinson said, Luke, you did state last week that if Undertaker comes out on a motorcycle, it would be American Badass. Check your footage and eat those words. Nope, there was no Limp Bizkit. It was not the American Badass. I'm standing by that. It was just a lad named Mark.
I saw someone say that apparently Kid Rock once remixed Metallica, so that is enough connective tissue.
He did,
so.
Yes. What's the American Badass song?
Oh, is it?
It's a Metallica song they use as the, I think it's Sad But True is the sort of the backing track for that song.
Well, then look, what's your problem, mate?
Whoa. Did you hear Kid Rock saying Devil Without a Cause? I'm going platinum. No, you did not. He didn't go platinum selling seven times. I went platinum selling rhymes.
I've done it now. I've gone and made a big mistake.
I've got my words all mixed up there as well. I've got my Kid Rock's raps mixed up. Anthony Williams, who do you think should face Drew next for the title? I'm thinking a 3MB reunion versus Seth's faction. That could be fun.
I think him and Seth is great. Like that would be really fun to watch. What are the other top heels on Raw, I guess? Like AJ, I don't think is quite, I mean, he's dead now, so.
Matthew Robinson again, love the possible Bianca call-up. She would add well to both women's divisions. Which show should you go to without considering Montez Ford? I feel like she's at home on Raw. That's the feeling I get.
Yeah, I don't split them up. Like, don't do that thing that WWE always does of splitting up real life couples, because it's just cruel.
Normie Legion, Tamina Mania running wild. Matthew Robinson again said, who do you think a year from now will headline WrestleMania for both the men's and women's? Stay safe. Here's some monies. I think it's almost impossible to predict at this point. It's always impossible to predict Mania headliners sort of a year ahead of time. But I would like to see Becky Ronda too for the title. I could almost see them doing Ripley Charlotte too for a championship. With Ripley overcoming.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's so much that's. I think Drew will probably be in the mix somewhere because I don't think he's going to lose steam. I think he's got that kind of natural flair, that character work that I think he can really build off this. I wouldn't be surprised. If Rollins was there, maybe Owen. Like, there's so much. Like, we've seen over the course of a weekend how much your stock can be raised. So who knows who could just like get that little catch of lightning and be propelled, like Kofi Kingston, for example. Probably wouldn't have guessed exactly. That at WrestleMania 33. So,
Matthew Robinson, did you guys get a feel of Freddy Krueger with the Bray Wyatt, with Cena overworking his arms? It was like a nightmare where the villain uses the guy's strength against them.
Just like breaking, like watching a wrestler break himself down by doing too much exercise. Like, it's genuinely unsettling. Like, this, yeah, even like it was mostly funny, but there were some moments of just like, ugh, in that farmhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, I like, actually, that's quite a good comparison of Freddy Krueger. It's very like sort of late latter day Nightmare on Elm Street movies. Each 96, can we give credit to Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy for the final deletion? Otherwise, we wouldn't have got the Boneyard or the Firefly Funhouse.
Possible.
Difficult to say, but like, I think that the only people from whom Matt Hardy needs kind of acknowledgement, he has it. Everyone is just like saying, Matt Hardy, you are the pioneer of this style. I don't think he needs WWE to come out and say anything, because Matt Hardy is secure enough in his own, his own legacy, really.
Here's another interesting one from Jordan. During the match, Bray said, I was the color red in a world of black and white. The Fiend's attire is black and white mostly, except for his pants, which are red. Do you think that this line explains his attire?
Sure. Yeah.
Could absolutely be.
He does have red pants.
Matthew McFadden, I reckon we'll get another mixed tag tournament. We could have Garza and Vega, Braun and Bliss, Ford and Belair, Ziggler and Deville, Otis and Mandy, etc. I think someone's calling for the return of Mixed Match Challenge, which I'm pretty sure only one person in the entire world wants, and that's not even Mark Zuckerberg.
I'm up for the Mixed Match Challenge. Oh, because it's all on Facebook. Yeah, screw that. But like, yeah. If it was a network exclusive, I'd be mega up for that. Cruiserweight Classic. Can we have another one of those, please? Because I rewatched that because I was just doing a list about Gargano and Ciampa. And God, the Cruiserweight Classic was great.
God, it was so much fun.
Another one of those. All of these things that you could film. Without a stay-at-home order. But like, there's so much like of weird stuff that WWE could do now in the next kind of few months. I really hope they can visit. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
So I was going to say, can I ask you to do a little bit of research for me? Because Issa Dumbbeat has said, what about that tweet Nakamura has sent out? So can you get up onto Twitter and see what old Shinsuke Nakamura has been tweeting?
Shinsuke Nax.
Logan Heath says, first super chat, more to come. Love you both. Thank you very much, Logan, for your very, very kind words.
Shinsuke Nakamura has simply tweeted three words, let me in.
He wants to be part of the Firefly Funhouse.
Up for it. I'm up for it.
Up for it. William Buner, happy with WrestleMania, but WrestleTalk put it over the top. Thank you, Adam, Pete, and your peasants. And Matthew Robinson said, what are the future plans for the live chats or shows without live content to review for WrestleTalk? Well, if there are no more shows... But we don't know, because apparently the report is that WWE are just going to ignore the regulations that are being
secret
set in place.
Secret locations.
Exactly. You can't find us if it's a secret. It's that meme is that can't stop us if they don't know where we are. So if there are no more shows, the plan that we had talked about was we would do like fan polls of retro episodes of Raw or even Nitro, and we'll do like weekly reviews of those instead. So, you know, we're taking it day by day. We'll see what happens when it happens. But from what we understand, AEW have taped up until Double or Nothing. So at least we've got AEW's weekly television to still review. We just don't know with WWE at the moment. Armo says, do you guys currently have any job openings? I don't think so. Certainly not in the YouTube team. But get in touch with Andy at WrestleTalk.com and see if there's any openings for the website. James Morris, good afternoon, boys. Just popping in to say hi, and we'll rewatch this later from the start. Glad I found WrestleTalk, and I can't wait for No Rolls Barred Season 2. Stay safe.
Oh, we all can't wait for No Rolls Barred Season 2. Yeah.
Oh, we've actually had a suggestion for the next a possible guest for Quizlemania. This is from Walu TV, Dan. He suggested Riley Reid.
Ooh.
Do we think it's possible?
I mean, Andy, I'll get Andy to make that connection.
If there's anyone who has got those sorts of connections, it would be Randy Andy Datsun. Randy by name. Kratos has forgotten son. I'm having tech issues logging in via Streamlabs, so my apologies. I just want to say thank you guys again for both nights of live streams this weekend. It was a lovely time and so much fun. Hashtag WrestleTalk for life. Thank you so, so much for watching. And speaking of Streamlabs, we had one last night that I missed from Dan, who said next feud for Edge against Rollins because Rollins tried to paralyze him a few years ago.
Ah.
So I think that'd be a fun SummerSlam match
for him.
Yeah,
that'd be really good.
And our last message comes in from Dylan, who said, I just bought the network today to watch Cena versus The Fiend and Undertaker versus Styles. Personally, I thought that the Undertaker-Styles match was better. I love The Fiend, but I don't have as much of a connection to older John Cena because I was never a fan.
That's fair. It's definitely steeped in insider knowledge, and I think you do need to have experienced that anger with the Cena character and gone through that trauma in order to get the most out of it. I completely understand. Whereas Taker and AJ is just B movie, like no frills, let's just do something silly. Don't need any knowledge. All you need to know about the Undertaker is he arrives on a motorbike and has a bandana.
Hopefully to Limp Bizkit. That's all we've got time for on this edition of the show. Thank you very much for all joining us today. It's still a busy old week here at WrestleTalk HQ and our various different HQs. We're going to be back with the Raw After WrestleMania review tomorrow. It's Quizlemania on Wednesday with our first guest. It's a new weekly show now. Can you, Adam and Eve? That it's become a weekly show.
Yay, I'll just get back to photoshopping. Don't worry about me.
You're so good at the photoshopping, Adam. And then we've got the AEW and NXT reviews. NXT is going to be a big one this week. It's essentially the takeover show. And that'll be on Thursday. And we'll have the magazine show on Friday. SmackDown on Saturday. Hey, there's so much content.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.